Do you want us to unpack that for your listeners?
Because I do want you to unpack it. This episode of the Global Lithium Podcast is sponsored by Zalandez, a brine field services company providing real-time, actionable data. Zalandez recently saved a major lithium brine producer up to 50% in their drilling costs and increased brine well production rates by as much as 40%. Find out more at Zalandez.com.
Lithium really played into my overall theory about my dad and his job, because I think I always have told people, yeah, my dad works in the lithium industry, like batteries and antidepressants. Like, that is my line.
And even a little bit about our culture too. Like, I feel like it's an important element to be sharing with people outside the company. And yes, that is a deliberate strategy.
You're listening to the Global Lithium Podcast.
Hi, it's Joe Lowry. Welcome to another episode of the Global Lithium Podcast. My guests today are Dan Blondal, CEO of Nano One, famously known as the man with one tweet, and Dr. Stephen Campbell, Nano One's CTO. We discuss the recent announcement of Nano One's enabling technology for the manufacture of NMC 811. We talk about Nano One's plays in the LFP area and also the Spinel area. But this episode is not just about the new developments at Nano One. It's a broader discussion of the cathode space, recent developments in LFP battery pack technology by BYD and CATL, and how that may change the landscape of what cathode and what type of battery pack are used across the EV spectrum. As I've said on this podcast and in what I write many times, I believe the future of lithium chemicals is balanced. I don't believe lithium hydroxide is taking over, and I don't believe that high nickel cathodes are the ultimate EV technology. Again, I believe the EV world is migrating towards a balanced approach based on the specific needs of the consumer. And with that, Dan Blondal and Dr. Stephen Campbell.
And we're live. Welcome to another edition of the Global Lithium Podcast. My guests today are Dan Blondal, the CEO and man with one tweet from Nano One, and Dr. Stephen Campbell. Welcome, gentlemen. Tell us about this momentous single malt cathode announcement you made this morning. That's a play on words to the audience. It's actually not single malt, it's single pot. But okay, gentlemen, take it away.
What we announced this morning is some of the development work that we've done, which has been really exciting. Nano One's technology for making high nickel cathode materials is what we call our one pot process, which is radically different in the chemistry from the traditional, what we call the conventional way of doing it, in that we add everything into the one pot: the nickel, the manganese, the cobalt, the lithium, and additives that form dopants and coatings all go into the one reactor to produce one precursor. When it comes out of the furnace, it comes out where each individual crystal of 811 is individually coated in a protective coating that imparts much greater durability than the uncoated material. So this durability means we get better cycle life and less degradation. And the material we get has a unique morphology in this sense, because conventionally you make a precursor which is a hydroxide precursor, which is a large, dense crystalline sphere. And then you mix that with ground up lithium hydroxide powder and you fire it so the lithium soaks into it. And then you have to take it out of the furnace and then you have to put a coating on the outside. So you disperse the coating material on the outside and then you generally refire it again to make the crystalline coating on the outside. So there's a lot of different firing steps. We put everything in one reactor, so there's just one firing, and it comes out of that kiln. It cools down already coated, so it's much more durable.
Is it fair to say then, and this harkens back to both your original podcast and a couple of the ones I've done with Dr. Gao, when you talk about the structure of the cathode in the tunnels that the ions go through, that because your process yields a more stable structure, you don't have the level of side reactions that create the degradation and close off the tunnels? Is that too simple, or?
Well, it's you're almost there, I think. The conventional way of making it is you make like an M&M. You sugarcoat the outside of the chocolate, okay? But then if you imagine, as you put lithium in and out through these tunnels, the chocolate expands and contracts. And it tends, because it expands in all directions, it tends to fracture the coating on the outside, and that's the electrolyte in, so you lose the coating. You lose the integrity of the coating. When you have each individual crystal each coated, the whole agglomerate can expand and contract, but it doesn't affect the coating. It doesn't damage the coating. If the particles come apart and allow electrolytes in, it doesn't matter because all the surfaces are always coated. And this is the difference between the conventional coating, which coats the secondary particle, and our process, which coats the individual nanocrystals.
So your M&Ms don't crack, is basically what you're saying.
If you like, your M&Ms are really, really small.
Yeah.
And so you end up with a big particle made up of little M&Ms, and they don't crack.
All right. Okay. So this, what kind of life extension can that give you? Have you been able to get clarity on that, or... If we're talking
we have some initial results. So very recently, got some initial results, which is the basis of the news release that went out this morning, where we've compared our uncoated material with our coated material, and after over 100 cycles, it degraded 4%, and the uncoated material faded 17%. So that's like a 4 times greater longevity. But that's only recent results we have in the lab. And we're proceeding with much bigger testing. We're scaling up the process so that we can start doing some really big pouch cell work to understand it. But the initial results are very encouraging.
Okay. When I actually tweeted your press release this morning and got some very quick feedback from some, I would say, Nano One supporters, but people that really want to understand when you compare and contrast what you're doing with the quote unquote conventional process. And the question was put to me is everybody out there doing 811 essentially doing the same type of process? And that would be what would be called conventional. And your innovation is really intrinsically different because of the way you get each M&M with a smaller M&Ms with better coating.
Yeah, the when we say conventional, the way these materials are generally done is you co-precipitate nickel, manganese, and cobalt, and perhaps dopants, if you're putting aluminum or a zirconium or titanium in it. You would add them into a reactor, and you precipitate them all in base as a hydroxide, and you get these dense hydroxide precursors. And then they're filtered, washed, and dried. And then you grind in the lithium hydroxide. And then you put that mixture of lithium hydroxide powder and your NMC powder into your kiln, and you fire it. And then the lithium soaks in after you. And you take it out, and you grind it again, you put it back in, and you grind it. It takes 2 or 3 days.
And specific to 811 and these high nickel materials is when you fire it and then take it out of the furnace, it's very moisture sensitive. So all of this has to be done in a dry environment, partly from the lithium hydroxide point of view, but also the whole thing is very moisture sensitive. So 811 differs. I mean, it's still the conventional process, but you have to have this dry end of the manufacturing that you wouldn't have to have with 532, for instance, or 111. There's a difference there, but essentially the kernel of the process, which is the precursor, the lithiation, and the firing, that's all still the same.
Yeah, so to put it in less technical terms, okay, so the other flavors of NMC 111 or 532 do not require as rigorous an environment climate control.
Yeah, they're much, much easier to fire. And if you're below, if like 111, you can fire in air. It doesn't have to be fired in oxygen. 622 prefers oxygen. 811 demands oxygen.
For the podcast listeners and the people in the Twitter sphere, hopefully you now understand that what's conventional and what Nano's doing with respect to their announcement today and their new product. So what else is happening, guys?
There's certainly lots of kind of noise right now and excitement about about partly what we announced today, this idea of longer lasting 1,000,000-mile batteries, and all kinds of information about wrapped into all of that is LFP and NMC and single crystals, and you know, we've had a number of announcements recently about our LFP, about our single crystal, about this kind of notion of 1,000,000-mile batteries. It's all playing very kind of heavily into our space, and we're quite well positioned because we've got technology to address, you know, each one of these sort of verticals that we're seeing and strategic materials.
Well, that's the other area I wanted to get into, or one of the other areas I wanted to get into is Nano One. Really, you have a play in high nickel, you have a play in LFP. So it's just a matter of how things develop. And the way I've always viewed it is you have horses for courses, and you're going to have a balance on where high nickel goes and where LFP is strong. So how do you see your next couple of years playing out? Where are you going to focus? And I just don't want to create the impression that you are in one camp or the other, when my understanding is you can play in either the carbonate side of the house or the hydroxide side of the house, if you want to view it that way, or the nickel cathodes or LFP.
Yeah, you know what, Joe, we actually have three kind of strategic materials we're pursuing: the LFP, the high nickel NMC, and also what we call our high voltage spinel, which is predominantly a manganese based material with a nickel doping that runs at very high voltage. Each one of them has pros and cons. Each one of them have properties that are beneficial to certain applications. We don't know ultimately which one's going to there isn't going to be a winner. There's going to be a continuum of these materials, and I think it's important that we're positioning our technology to be able to do any one of these things. The fact that we can use lithium carbonate as feedstock for the high nickel materials is very unique, and I think advantageous. LFP, its benefits have traditionally been low cost, safe, long lasting. But if you start looking at some of the innovations now coming out of CATL and BYD, they're starting to be able to pack more of it between the cells. They're taking advantage of the thermal stability properties of LFP, and they're making their cells, the cells and their battery packs much denser, which means they're going to be launching 400, 500, 600 kilometer range cars powered by LFP. So that's a kind of a game changer as far as I can see. That could really change the balance. All of a sudden, LFP is no longer a 150 kilometer range car or just a bus material or just a material for the grid storage. It actually starts to address the long range luxury electric vehicle market as well. And we've always felt that was coming. We knew it was there. We took a bet on it. It doesn't mean we're abandoning NMC in favor of that. We believe they have their strengths and weaknesses, and we'll sort of continue to work on all of these things because they will all have a place in the market in the future.
Well, I think that's what's the quote unquote news now, or I think maybe the perceptions of a lot of the people that have interest in this space were incorrect, in that LFP could only be used for buses or for ESS. And the only guys who wanted LFP in a car were people buying the really cheap ones in China. And now it seems that there is a great potential for LFP, even in the mid-market. But I think the other thing that you've said that we've mentioned before, but I want to go back to, is that I've heard as recently as this morning in an online event that the future's hydroxide, because everybody's going to want a high nickel battery and you have to have hydroxide. But you're actually saying that there's a route to high nickel cathode that doesn't require hydroxide.
Do you want us to unpack that for your listeners?
Because I do want you to unpack it. I want you to throw everything in that suitcase on the table, Dan.
Well, I think I'll let Stephen explain it in the details, but maybe in a very, very high level, you need lithium hydroxide in a traditional process because it decomposes in the furnace at a temperature that's compatible with 811 and high nickel materials. And Stephen, I'll let you kind of run from there. But that's kind of the high level. And we get around that by converting lithium carbonate into a material that is compatible with those temperatures. And that's the key.
But before Stephen starts, let's just to be clear, the technology that's employed today, also known as the conventional process, requires hydroxide. But there is a way that eliminates the need for hydroxide because you deal with the issues at the beginning stages of the process. Is that fair enough?
So first you have to understand why the conventional process needs hydroxide and then how we get around it. So Steve, why don't you run with that?
The conventional process, because it's high nickel, you have to fire it at lower temperatures for shorter times. And one of the reasons is if you fire it for long or too hot or too long, you don't get the performance because the nickel and the lithium change places and you want to avoid that. So what they've done is they've lowered the temperature that you fire it at to stop that happening. And when you do that, you find the temperature is so low that lithium carbonate doesn't decompose and react. So you get left with unreacted lithium carbonate in your product. Lithium hydroxide actually melts and reacts at a much, much lower temperature. So if you use lithium hydroxide, it all works quite nicely at the lower temperature. So and the conventional process is tied into using lithium hydroxide. What we do in the Nano One process is when we add lithium carbonate as the feedstock into our one-pot reactor to produce the precursor, it reacts. So it's no longer lithium carbonate. So it reacts in the reactor, not in the kiln. So it reacts to something else that reacts and decomposes at a much lower temperature. So when it goes into the kiln, it isn't carbonate anymore. And that means we don't have the problem of unreacted carbonate in our product. So we can use lithium hydroxide or lithium carbonate in that reactor because the chemistry is very similar. And the product it turns into in that reactor is the same. So when it goes into the kiln, it behaves in exactly the same way. So the Nano One process can use either hydroxide or carbonate, which gives it a lot of flexibility in whatever happens in the price, relative price of these two things and availability over the timeframes in the coming years.
When you look at the capital involved, if you were greenfielding a cathode plant, how from a capital perspective, if you were going to implement Nano One's process, what would the capital look like? Would it be the same? Would it be lower because you have fewer steps? You must have some idea about that as you sell your process.
We have done some preliminary sort of cost models on what a full-scale plant would look like. And you're right, we have fewer process steps. And what this means is that your yield is higher and your CapEx and OpEx is lower. There's no doubt about that. It's always never very simple until you actually build it. But the initial results are that we can save significant amounts in the process cost.
And ultimately, the capital equipment as well, because if you can use your furnace more efficiently, that's the most expensive piece of capital equipment in a cathode plant. If you can use it more efficiently and you can coat the material simultaneously with building these single crystals, which is what our process does, you avoid any subsequent steps to coat the material. And that can actually have a significant impact on the cost because, you don't have to chuck it back in a furnace. Furnace costs a lot. Obviously, it costs a lot to operate, but it also costs it's a big piece of equipment. And if you get more utility out of it, that actually drives down the overall cost of the plant.
And the elimination of a lot of the intermediate grinding steps that go on in the firing lithiation press, solid state conventional, to use that term, lithiation process. You fire it and grind it and fire it and grind it to make sure the lithium is homogeneous in the product. Those grinding steps always tend to impart metallic impurities, which then have to be taken out in magnetic separation steps with magnets. We've never found the need to use magnetic separation because we don't really do any grinding. This also reduces the steps, the process steps and the CapEx involved.
If I'm going to satisfy your fans on social media. And again, I realize that neither of you are social media activists, but there's a lot of really legit questions, and people, you know, you have a really strong core following of people who want to see Nano succeed. How does it, you have in your corporate presentation a partner list of people you're working with. So how do you see getting to the next step for commercialization? I know you can't put an exact timeline on it, but
Timelines are always tricky, but I mean, really, as a company that's developing processing technology for cathode materials, we have a number of hoops we have to jump through. The first one, of course, is we go out and we test materials in initial tests, and we build our relationships based on how those things perform. That then leads to an examination of supply chain. Are our feedstocks sustainable and cheap enough to make a viable production process out of our technology? Do the engineering plans, the CapEx and the OpEx of an operating plant make sense? And I think by and large, we're there on, let's say, LFP. So we're at that stage in LFP right now. We completed a relatively detailed engineering report in mid-June and announced it. And that maps out a plant that is very cost effective, and both from an operations cost point of view and a capital point of view. And we've identified sources of iron and phosphorus that actually help drive down the cost of making the cathode materials. But the biggest step, and anytime you talk to anyone in this space, whether they're battery testers, lithium guys, is that you have to prove this stuff out, first of all, in coin cells and then pouch cells and then externally with third parties and then ultimately with their customers and their customers' customers. So there's a qualification process that everyone has to go through. And ultimately, I think that's probably the rate determining step. Mm-hmm. And we're well along the way with that on lithium iron phosphate. What we announced this morning in terms of the coated single crystal NMC materials, we're still working on what the formulations look like. So we're a little bit more on the development side. And that's because there is no definitive 811 chemistry. Everyone's trying to figure out what that looks like still. And we're among those groups, and we're working with our partners to do that. Once that's established, most of the other framework's in place. We know what the plant's going to look like. We know what it's going to roughly cost. We can do the detailed work on that. And the supply chains are relatively well understood. But the key thing there is actually proving that the materials outperform other sort of uncoated materials or other types of coated materials.
Well, when you look at yourself as a broader enabler of the use of LFP versus being able to potentially make 811 easier to make, do you have a thought as to what is the best way to deploy your technology? You're working with both, but do you have a more specific advantage in one side of the cathode house than the other?
I think there are different advantages because there are different attributes. Each individual family of materials has different attributes that are applicable to different markets. So they all are different in each one. And so Nano One's technology has a difference, makes a difference in all these different areas in a different way. Sometimes it's performance, sometimes it's durability, sometimes it's simply cost. And it's usually a mixture of all of those things. And they all play in different ways, whether it's high nickel or it's cobalt free or it's LFP.
So our process for making lithium iron phosphate, we're not fundamentally changing the formulation of lithium iron phosphate or additives or anything like that. We're optimizing the carbon coating. We do make a smaller particle than most people, so our LFP tends to have higher power. It means you can get lithium in and out faster, which means it has a better rate capability, and so it tends to lean towards power applications. But mostly LFP, our advantage, our process brings a cost advantage and a power advantage. For NMC, the cost advantage is still there, particularly because we're removing a number of steps. We're making it less complex to make these coated materials. And if you can make it longer lasting and more durable, then you can start to take advantage. A more durable material can either lead to a much longer lasting battery. You can charge it a lot faster. So you can sacrifice some of that longevity for charging,
performance durability trade-off.
Yeah, so you okay, well, I don't want this thing to last a million miles. Let's make it last 500,000 miles instead, and we'll charge it twice as fast, twice as often throughout the year. So those are some of the kinds of trade-offs that auto companies make, and having a more durable material is really key. So that's really the advantage on NMC. So there we're actually bringing a performance advantage that in the end is probably more valuable to Nano One, but it's specific to the NMC market. And then the high voltage spinel, this kind of lithium nickel manganese oxide material, has some really interesting advantages as well. But you have to make it, we have a way of, again, coating the single crystals on that material to protect it from degradation that's normally associated with the spinels. They traditionally kind of fall apart at the kind of temperatures that auto batteries operate at, kind of in the 50, 60 degree range. We've found a way to protect that from degrading, and we think it has some advantages in kind of next generation batteries. But it means we have to work with big players in terms of what does that next battery look like? Is it going to be solid state? Is it going to have a high voltage liquid electrolyte? So we're working in collaboration in an ecosystem with the anode guys, the electrolyte guys, and us, and then the overarching OEMs to design that next generation battery. And so that's where we see high voltage spinel going. And we have an advantage, obviously we have an advantage to be able to coat these and protect them and make them more durable. And so those are the advantages. They play out a little differently in each one of the markets and each one of the opportunities. They don't necessarily compete with each other, but they will, if LFP is as successful as BYD thinks it's going to be with 600 kilometer range car, then yeah, we'll see a shift. It may not be 60% NMC, 30% LFP like it is now. It may be they've flipped around. It might be 60% LFP, 30% NMC in the future. But we're positioned to kind of address, any one of those scenarios.
Yeah, I guess the way I've always viewed this, I understand it's a different advantage in a different cathode because of the way you manage different variables, but it all in the end comes down to economics.
Yes.
And yes.
Getting somebody to buy into this is the better mousetrap that we want to deploy. I'm still believing that you get one over the goal line. I'm just curious as to which one it is first.
I think, interestingly enough, I think our LFP is much closer. Yeah. I would say just because we're much further along in the engineering process and we understand what a detailed plant is going to look like. And that's because the formulation for LFP is anchored. And we know what it is. Yeah. So we're not changing that on a regular basis. NMC is less far because it's not sure. No one's really clear what 811, the ultimate 811 is going to look like. But if we're right and we're successful, it could move pretty quickly. I just think the sight lines on the LFP being commercially successful are much closer. And that's the one that's the one I still believe that we're going to get across the line first.
We would like to thank our sponsor, Zolandez, who prides itself on providing a new way of doing things in the lithium brine space. Recently, a junior lithium explorer in Argentina was able to save up to 20% in their exploration costs through the use of Zolandez technology services. To learn more, visit Zolandez.com. That's Zelandez.com.
Do you think that if there continues to be a struggle with 811, I mean, we see it in Poland, what LG is doing is it's not the first digit's not an 8, it's a 7. Obviously, they wanted it to be an 8. So there's these trade-offs that obviously are giving people a suboptimal result over what they expected. Do you believe if high nickel continues to struggle a bit, does that make your path in LFP in the next 5 years more likely? Or do you see them as not having that kind of level of interaction?
It's a great question. NMC is difficult to make. It has to be fired in oxygen. It's very air sensitive when you take it out. There's going to be lots of spoilage issues, and there's lots and lots of challenges working with that material. And obviously, LG is finding that in Poland, as are many other players. We're working hard to try and resolve some of those issues. Some of them are fundamental. Some of them you can't really solve. You have to still fire our material in oxygen. That doesn't change. But if you can make the material more durable, then the total cost of the ownership of the material gets better. And of course, you give the battery designer more flexibility to charge faster, drive further, whatever it might be. So yeah, there's some distinct advantages there. But it's going to always be tricky to make. The thing about LFP is NMC doesn't replace it as an industrial material. LFP traditionally has been all about, I mean, you can cycle it 5,000, 10,000 yeah. times. It's all about duty cycle. Yep. So if you're charging your battery fully every day or several times a day, LFP is the material that makes the most sense. And that's why you see it in fleet vehicles, of taxis, buses, grid storage applications. That's its kind of traditional place. And I don't think NMC was ever going to displace that. We're going to see continual growth in that area. We're going to see LFP coming into 12, 24, 48 volt applications for mild hybrid batteries and things like that. But what we're seeing in China now with BYD specifically, and maybe CATL, CATL is less clear, but what we're seeing is a battery pack design that takes advantage of the thermal properties of LFP, allows them to pack the cells way closer because it's much more thermally stable. Then you start to, once you start to get over, if you can make a 400 kilometer range LFP car, then it starts to bite into the NMC stuff. And then I think the hassles that everyone's futzing around with on NMC start to become bigger hassles because LFP is just an easier material to handle. So our bet on LFP has largely been about that. If BYD is right and the innovation they're making for their Han vehicle to go 600 kilometer range, I mean, they're launching the thing, so it's got to be real. Can they do it? Sustainably? Can they actually make it successful? If they do, then yeah, I think the hurdles and the hassles of making high nickel NMC become bigger hurdles because LFP just becomes more attractive because the design of that battery then enables long range luxury electric vehicles powered by LFP.
Okay, with Tesla coming out with a Model 3 that uses LFP, I have not read what the exact specs are for that model, that version of the Model 3. If you were able to have, let's just say a Model 3 with the current design versus a Model 3 with an LFP that could go substantially the same distance, then what other performance characteristics between those cathodes are going to make the experience of owning that vehicle different?
I think that it's just speculation because, as you say, we don't know what the specs of these vehicles are
exactly.
But if we may for a moment speculate, I think that the cathode material itself is a small part of a highly engineered battery pack, battery management system, powertrain. So I would expect that there shouldn't be any significant difference in the performance, because what controls the performance in terms of power, range, and all those attributes for the battery pack and for the powertrain are more dominated by the design than they are by the actual material, the powder that goes on a coating on aluminum foil in one cell, in a module, in a battery pack, in a powertrain. So I suspect that it's relatively straightforward to design the powertrain such that the difference will be very small indeed, if indeed noticeable by the user.
Can you have ludicrous mode in a Tesla using LFP?
So ludicrous mode is basically just it's discharging your battery at a high C rate. That's what it is. And so if your battery is really big, the C rate isn't as much, because you're not, if you've got a 40 kilowatt hour battery and ludicrous mode needs 10 kilowatts, your C rate is 15 minutes.
Yeah,
which is a pretty aggressive C rate, but it's not, that's 4C.
Yeah.
So that's not that bad. So you can kind of get away. You don't want to do it too often, but you know what? You only can do ludicrous mode for about 5 seconds before you're breaking the speed limit. So
or you're in a lake, or dead,
or you're off.
No, I mean it was a facetious way to ask a serious question, though. Do you believe that you can really get a LFP battery that, it's say in the middle market, performs?
Yeah.
As well as something with a high nickel, because it's obviously going to be perform better from the standpoint that you could supercharge it every day, probably, without having to worry about denigrating the life.
Yeah, because it comes with 5,000, 10,000 cycles in it. So who cares if you lose a little bit? Because if you're only driving.
If you stop for a coffee every 3 or 4 hours, it's not a problem, you know. It's if you have to stop for lunch and a walk, and then it gets to be a long drive, you know.
You know, yeah. If your LFP battery, this, you know, LFP has already been million mile for ages anyways. I mean, you know what, if it's a 200 mile battery and it gets 5,000 cycles, there's a million miles. NMC hasn't been that because it only traditionally gets 1,000 or 1,500 cycles. And that's kind of the problem. So this whole notion of million miles, it plays very well in the headlines. But realistically, no one really is going to drive a million miles except a taxi or a bus.
And yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I mean. You see all this buzz out in the Tesla sphere. Oh, they're gonna talk about the million mile battery on battery day, but I don't need a million mile battery. I don't even think I want one because I don't want to keep a car that long. I mean, my Lexus is 9 years old and it's only got 70,000 on it. So.
Yeah, no, it's pretty. It's when you start to think about the math from a consumer electric vehicle, it doesn't make sense. But I mean, to go back to your notion about the performance, if the battery is big enough, you can accelerate really quickly because your C rate doesn't have to be as high. So the bigger the battery, the less arduous that performance is on the battery, and that's actually the key thing is that these batteries are going to be large anyways because they want big range. And that big range allows you to accelerate really quickly.
Yeah. The other issue is that the lithium iron phosphate, as we said, the reason why the BYD technology works is because it can get a lot hotter without damage. So you can situate if you're fast charging or in ludicrous mode, you're pulling 4C out of your battery pack. It's going to get hot. And I've seen demonstrations where Tesla have temperature control that cut the power if it's too high for too long because the battery pack gets hot and the battery management system will shut down, will reduce the power output to keep the temperature in a safe zone. LFP can take a kicking in that regard. It doesn't degrade if it gets too hot. So you can afford to thump 4 or 5C out of it for a few minutes without, and it'll get hot, but it'll cool down again afterwards. It's not a problem. So you don't have to have this battery management system limiting the performance. So in actual fact, in that sense, the potential is that you may be able to get more, or at least get high power for longer out of an LFP battery because it doesn't need to be kept cool.
Performance has never really been the LFP limit. It has been the range. And it's a fact that they just couldn't pack enough cells between the wheels right. to get range. And again, if BYD and his Blade battery are right, they've solved that problem. And if they've solved that problem, then it becomes a contender for long-range vehicles. And the performance thing is I don't think is an issue, as Stephen just explained. You can get around that.
And that's why I wanted to touch on that, because a lot of the stuff I see written out there acts like you have to have high nickel to have a high-performing battery. And I think with the changes we're seeing, that's not necessarily the case.
Right.
Yeah.
There is a place for the new design of LFP in the full spectrum of electric transportation, not just fleet vehicles, not just buses.
Yeah.
I think that's what they've been able to prove that by, and it's about design and it's about using the attributes of the material correctly on optimizing the design of the product or the battery pack and the cells to utilize the fundamental characteristics of the material. And that's what BYD have done and what CATL is saying they're going to do. And that's really, really creative thinking to be able to do that.
Well, you know, if you look at sort of batteries sort of in the greater context of all their applications right now, you know, when you break open a battery for, let's say, a power tool, it's a whole bunch of cylindrical cells packed into a little box that you plug into the bottom of your drill. And by and large, that's what a car battery is. It's a whole bunch of batteries that are either cylindrical or cube shaped that are packed into a larger battery pack. Those cells have never been redesigned for a car application really until now. And if BYD has gone and redesigned the cell, say, well, you know what, the opportunity here is let's redesign the cell, kind of like everyone's done for phones and laptops. The cells for phones and laptops were redesigned for those applications long ago. But we haven't done it to the car until just now. And that's the advantage, I think, that this Blade battery has. It's redesigned for the car. It's redesigned specific to the LFP properties, the thermal properties of LFP. And you can't take that design and port it over to NMC. It doesn't work because of that. So it makes this new LFP design, it gives it a distinct advantage and a distinct, I think, a distinct barrier to entry for some of these high nickel materials as well. That's not to say that a specifically designed high nickel battery format isn't going to come out of all this. And I think it probably will. Someone will go, well, what are we doing using cylindrical cells? We should be redesigning this thing to actually fit a car. So they're going to come out with a specific design for NMC batteries, and that'll challenge LFP. And there'll be this teeter-totter, this back and forth, this arms race towards designing the cell to make it better and better, and designing the pack to make it better and better. But the underlying chemistry is largely the same.
Well, I think if you look at why Tesla did what they did over a decade ago with 18650s, it was because Panasonic had a huge overcapacity of 18650. That was the most economical thing they could do.
Yeah.
And given the resources they had, it made sense at the time. But it's also to do with,
remember 10 years ago, the scale, the volumes they were talking about weren't particularly large because they were starting from zero. But as the battery breaks into the automotive market globally, the volumes get so big that having batteries specifically designed for cars makes much more economic sense because the volumes are there to pay for it. The shift that's happening now.
Hopefully on the next version of the podcast that we find out that Nano One has been joined up with the big partners who have come up with these new specifically designed EV batteries.
Yeah, well, that's certainly what we're angling for.
That's what we're going for. Yeah.
You know what? We see it across the board. We see the OEMs, be they the guys in the consumer electronics or in the automotive sector or power tools. They're all starting to now think very specifically about redesigning the cells and the packs for their applications. And because they, you know, it's taken 10 years to get to this stage, and now we're at it, and we're going to see a branch of batteries coming out that are very specific to these applications.
Well, I'm expecting you guys to be an overnight success within the next 2 years. So
that's a long dark night.
Yeah, well,
all right. So what else should we cover before I ask the obligatory rapid fire questions? Anything else?
Well, I think if we haven't completely saturated your audience with a dearth of information, I think now's time to turn off the fire hose and go to the questions.
Well, no, I actually think that this was a very good discussion because we touched on points that are misunderstood by people that are writing about the industry. People are that wax eloquent about the industry quite often. So I think this was useful, and I appreciate your time. But Dan, this is probably the hardest rapid fire question I've ever asked. If you were going to have a second tweet, what would it be?
Well, other than tweet number two, which would have to be followed by a meaningful tweet number three, I would love it to be LFP is here to stay. Told you so.
Okay. I thought it was going to be that you're $100 million cathode plant was had completed construction, but hey, it's your tweet.
That's number three.
That's perhaps number three. Yes.
All right, Stephen. Mm-hmm. What is the last book you read?
The last book I read. Seriously, it was Boccaccio, Decameron, 14th century Italian.
Okay, what language did you read it in?
English.
Okay. Gentlemen, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure, and we will leave it there.
Thank you very much, Joe. Thanks. Take care. Stay safe.
This has been another episode of the Global Lithium Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. I'm on Twitter at Global Lithium and write extensively on LinkedIn, where you can find me under my name, or at Global Lithium LLC. And with that, I'll leave you to it.